This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, and now let's get right into the gardening show. We are joined today by Turner Community Garden Program Director Peter Huttinger. Peter, welcome back to the program.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Glad to have you. We also have with us Waterfields, Director of Greenhouse Operations and Adjunct Faculty Member at the University of Cincinnati, Joshua Jones. Joshua, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And we know you want to call in, too, with your questions and comments, so please give us a call at 513-419-7100. How's your garden shaping up this summer? What issues have you had? What successes have you had? Our experts are standing by. You can also email us at talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll be looking for your comments and your tweets there. So, guys, Starbucks is already bringing back pumpkin spiced lattes days earlier, and I saw even that the brewery in Covington, Braxton, is launching a new hard seltzer that's pumpkin spiced flavored. So it appears that autumn is on the mind, and even though we're still in August, we have several weeks to go of summer. People are probably thinking of cooler temperatures, and maybe it's getting the calendar that much closer to a possible remedy for this COVID-19 thing. So let me start with you, Peter, since you haven't been on the show in quite a while. As it relates to people's outdoor activities, their plans with their landscaping and their gardening, what should they be thinking about as their mind shifts towards changing leaves and pumpkins and that sort of thing?
I think that if you're a vegetable gardener, you're busy harvesting right now because of the cool early, the cool weather in the spring, that the tomatoes are really now coming on very strong, which is a little later than they usually are. So a lot of people are doing that. Squash, cucumbers, and things like that. If you're looking at planting fall garden, your deadline is really closing fast. Some things you still could plant are, say, for instance, turnips, some variety of cool weather lettuces like the Boston type, the buttercrunch. Even spinach is also a good crop, and as well as radishes. And then you can do your salad mixes and things like that.
And Joshua Jones, as we start to inch closer to September and therefore autumn towards the end of that month, what are some things that you see people as needing to be doing about right now as they either wrap up their summer activities and start to look ahead to the autumn season or to next summer?
It's a great time to start thinking about your turf. Planting grass seed in the fall is probably the time where you have the most success in germination. We get a lot of turf questions on the show, and right now is when it's an effective time to start really weeding out your turf and making room so we can plant grass seed in the upcoming month.
Okay, I was reading some articles online about some tips to be implementing this time of year if you're somebody who has a green thumb and you're outside. And obviously, some people take the colder seasons off and they don't worry too much about things again until the temperatures start to change for the warmer. And so if you're looking ahead to spring, for example, is this a good time for those spring bulbs to go into the ground, Peter?
Yes, it is. You may want to wait till the first, maybe the first week of September. I mean, we're almost there. Obviously, August traditionally is the hottest month of the year. And so when you do plant new spring bulbs, you don't want to have them in hard-baked soil. So one of the things I find, too, is you're putting in your spring bulbs is that if it's been a dry spell, you can, water the area you want to plant the day before so it sort of softens up the soil. Or a day or two after it rains, you don't want to plant them in the soggy, wrenched soil. But be planting them into moist soil, kind of wakes them up a little bit as they move towards the winter, and so it helps them get more established.
And 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation, if you'd like to ask a question about gardening and landscaping this time of year, or some successes that you've seen, some difficulties that you've experienced, or some ideas that you might have for next year that you might want to start prepping for early. Peter and Joshua are on the line with us for the rest of the hour to answer your questions at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. So Joshua, as people start to clean up their vegetable gardens. What are some tips as they wind that down?
So sanitation is really important when it comes to next year's insect pressure. So cleaning up any leaf debris that's inevitably going to come with the falling leaves of fall, and making sure that you don't have any like large boards or anything that are in your garden. That, you know, if you do, stand them up so they're not covering the ground. These are all places that like to, where the insects like to hide their eggs so they have some frost protection over the winter. And then, I'd also think if you're doing vegetable gardening, it's going to be a great time, first and second week of spring, to start doing your cover cropping. That's going to help feed your soil as well as help you out maintaining weeds for the next year. So you can do a little bit of work this year that'll help you out tremendously next year.
And we've got a question via email from Melanie, who wrote us at talk@wvxu.org. Several of our trees, including a Japanese red maple, ginkgo, pin oak, and others, took it on the chin during the warm spring when it turned frigid. After putting out leaves, most of them lost those leaves and are now looking sparse and perhaps sick. And she wants to know, quote, is there anything we can do this fall or winter to help them revive in the true spring? Joshua, can we help Melanie out here? I love that she used the term the true spring, because we do get a lot of lying seasons around here.
Yeah, and it seems like that's happening more and more often these days. So I am one of those people that have a ginkgo and a Japanese maple in my yard. They look a bit worse for wear right now, exactly what she said, just the cold snap in the spring. I'm not too worried about it. I've consulted some tree professionals throughout the year just to find out, and they were not concerned. They should drop their leaves as normal, and as long as next spring we don't get that same cold snap, they should be doing quite all right. I think what you'll see is you won't see as much seed production on some of the trees. So the bur oak won't drop as many nuts as well as the ginkgo. So you're going to see some of that, what we seed pressure will be down a little bit. But that doesn't really hurt the tree in the long run.
Okay, so Joshua, then Melanie should just kind of wait it out. Sometimes you're going to have a bad season where maybe the trees aren't as attractive as you'd like, but no need to panic.
Exactly. I would just classify it as cosmetic damage.
Okay, we got an email at talk@wvxu.org from Joanne, and she says, each year, my thornless honey locust tree drops its leaves beginning in mid-August. It's about 20 years old, and by mid-September, it's bare of leaves. And she wants to know, is this normal? If not, what can be done about it, and what is the lifespan of this tree? Peter, is that something that you can help us with?
No, I'm not the tree guy. I'm more the fruit and vegetable. I don't know if Joshua may have a little bit more information on that.
It's one of our challenges here when we have you guys on the phone. Usually I can make eye contact and see who's nodding and can take that on. But I don't want to keep you out of the conversation, Peter, but we'll shoot this over to Joshua.
So I am in the same boat as Peter, but I do have my future parents-in-law. They have a couple of thornless locusts, and I noticed that they drop their leaves very early on every year. So I would assume, educated guess, that that's just par for the course for the locusts. Much like buckeyes, they like to drop their leaves a little bit earlier. So each species of tree is kind of on their own schedule. So I wouldn't be concerned because I've seen it on other locusts as well.
Okay, so we've got some concerns about trees lingering out there, but so far the advice is not to panic. Everything should just be fine. Just be patient with it. Maybe it's just having a down season, although it is interesting that she seems to have this happen each year. Okay, 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join us on the phone. Let's go to the phone lines now. We've got John. Hi, John. What's your question or comment?
Hi, hello. Yes, advice much needed. Save my arborvitaes, please. I have a mature one that's 7 to 8 years old. It's beautiful. It's over 7 feet tall. It's dying from the top down. It's brown almost halfway down. And it's sitting right next to a beautiful tree. It's twin, and it's perfectly fine. Why is this one dying from the top down? Also, I have a young arborvitae that I planted 3 months ago, and it's browning from the bottom up. So is that a watering issue? Is it drought? Is it a pest? And how can I save these two trees?
Okay, John, let me place you on hold as we go back to our experts on the line. And I know that each of you, Peter and Joshua, have stated that maybe you're more vegetable and plant guys, but we're getting a lot of questions about trees today, which is very interesting. So, Joshua, do you know anything about the arborvitae?
I know that I have seen this before, but I am not sure the direct cause. But if he would like to give me an email, I will certainly put him in contact with my buddy John Butcher, who we've had on the show before. And I'm sure he can better direct him than I would be able to.
Okay, then I am going to keep John on hold, and I'll have our producer, Selena, pass on Joshua's email to John, and hopefully you can connect online outside of the show and get some advice. They do follow up with the folks who call in, and we're not able to fully answer the questions. So hang in there, John, and our producer, Selena, will check back in with you momentarily and get you connected with Joshua outside of the show. 513-419-7100 is our number. Let's go now to Will. Hi, Will. What's your question or comment?
Hello. I like to go hiking in around the Cincinnati area, and I've seen a couple of rare oak hybrids that I haven't been able to find any literature on, so I was wondering if anybody had any recommendations for where I could read up about these oak hybrids.
Okay, great question, Will. We appreciate the call. Stand by, and we'll have our experts take a stab at that one. So, guys, native oak hybrids, looking for some more information on where you can learn more. And I guess Peter or Joshua, if either of you know an answer for that.
Well, one thing I thought was kind of interesting what you're saying is when we speak of a hybrid is usually a cultivar that has the, you know, human intervention, has crossed species or done things, cross-pollinated to get different hybrids out of it. So, you know, I wouldn't so much think of it as a native tree, so to speak. I mean, in Ohio, I know there's a couple different varieties. But again, we pass back to Josh to see if he might have any more additional information.
Yeah, Josh. I know that.
Unfortunately, I don't.
You might not be the guy who can perhaps answer the questions about these native oaks that Will was talking about. But if he is looking for a resource to take a deep dive on the story of these trees, I know there are places around here that maybe you're familiar with that he could learn more about.
Yeah, I would certainly try to go to the International Society of Arboriculture. That is the arborist kind of overarching community. I know they have plenty of websites and forums that I'm sure he could post some photos, and you would get a lot of qualified people that could help you out in identifying and kind of giving you a little bit of history, if you will, about those trees.
All right, Will, good luck. Enjoy the hikes. It's getting ready to be a nice time of year for that sort of activity. 513-4. Oh, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I was going to say just to also to go with Ohio State University Extension. They also have a number of different PDF files that you can download and online resources for tree identification in Ohio. And so that would be also a very quick fix that you can do. But then you could also contact the Hamilton County Office of Ohio State Extension, and their phone number is 513-946-8989.
All right, that's 513-946-8989, Will, if you want to call the local office of the Ohio State Extension Office. 513-419-7100 is the number to call us if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's go to the phones again now. We've got Lee on the line. Hi, Lee. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I just have a comment. I want to let people know that I know a lot of people shy away from growing both either summer or winter squash because of the squash bugs. And just a little thing to suggest to them is to lay cardboard down around your plants, around the base and around the perimeter, spread it out, and it not only helps keep the weeds down, but it will attract toads. And those toads love, love, love to eat squash bugs. I have not had squash bugs on any of my squash plants for years.
Well, that's great advice, Lee. We do appreciate you giving us a call and letting us know that tip. Thank you so much for listening and taking some time for us today. We appreciate it very much, Lee. Thank you. And we also got a question via phone from Rob, who says he was having problems with insects on his zucchini. So he got the suggestion to plant a little bit later. And so he wants to know, is it too late to plant, Peter?
Yeah, it is too late to plant now. But it's usually after June 25th as to... you'll kind of reduce the possibility of getting squash borer, but it's not a guarantee. And it does seem to be that this year, some of the insects, I don't know if it could be at a cooler spring, but they seem to stick around a lot more. Right now, also, if people are growing, you know, like your zucchini, your tail end of your summer squash varieties, I know the stink bugs are hitting them pretty hard. And so you'll need to kind of keep an eye on that. But the insect, the basic thing that most people are trying to get avoid is the squash borer, and that's the little white moth butterfly you see flying around with the black dots on its wing. It lays its eggs in the base, and then it grows into a grub, which is white with a black head, a black spot on its head. And when you get the way you can identify that is that there'll be frass, which is sort of a golden color, kind of moist sawdust looking material that's down right next to the base of your plant. And you can get rid of that two ways. One, some people will inject it with BT, a biological insecticide. But the easiest thing is you split the stem lengthwise and spread it apart and go in and with a pocket knife and dig out the grub and then kill it. And then you close the plant back up and cover that cut area with soil or compost. And, you know, I would say like easily 75% of the time the plant does fine and goes forward.
All right. Great advice. We appreciate that.
And the one thing is the connection that we had before, the woman that was talking, her talking about putting down the cardboard, but was there a second thing that she said that she did?
I think that she said that the cardboard attracts toads and that the toads come over and eat the bugs.
Okay, well, that's a great collaboration. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
it was very
some people, too, with your vining squash, people will, you know, if not around the plant itself, I know sometimes if your soil is a little bit moist, people will put a piece of cardboard underneath. I have a tendency to use a flake of straw. It's a little better because Joshua mentioned earlier about insects laying eggs and living underneath boards. You can create a hotel for slugs if you use boards or too much cardboard. So if you use the cardboard, that's a good idea, but just kind of as a kind of mulch. But be sure and kind of check underneath it every once in a while to make sure that you're not have any sort of unintended insects living under there.
And you're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, noted idiot when it comes to outdoor activities. But on our monthly gardening show, we are joined by the experts, Turner Community Garden Program Director Peter Huttinger and Waterfields Director of Greenhouse Operations and Adjunct Faculty at UC, Joshua Jones. So give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We got an email from Anne, and she says, this summer I had a lot of fungal issues with my vegetables, specifically with tomatoes. I'd like to do a fall planting, but what can I do to not have those same problems? She wants to know, what can I do next spring to not have my plants fall victim once again? So it sounds like a two-part question, Joshua. Annie wants to know what she can do not to have the same fungal problems with a fall planting and also what to do for next spring not to have the vegetable plants fall victim again.
So as far as the fall planting of tomatoes, I would highly recommend not doing that. Where you're going to run into more fungal issues just because funguses happen when it's hot and when it's wet. The heat might go away, but the rain's going to start to pick up. And we have had a lot of rainfall this summer. I think that we're higher than average. So it doesn't surprise me that we're seeing these fungal issues. I would think her time and space would be better well spent growing proper fall crops such as lettuces and, broccolis and cabbages, things that do well in the cool weather. Tomatoes don't love the cool weather. And then to answer the second part of the question is there's a multi-pronged attack to keeping down the funguses on your tomato. The funguses are a soil-borne fungus. So what happens is as it rains, the soil splashes up onto the leaves, and that transmits the fungal spores from the soil to the plant. So if we can create a barrier between the soil and the plant, that's going to be the your first line of defense. And Peter was talking about earlier laying down a nice thick flake of straw. I've had huge successes with that in the past. And then after that, what I like to do is try to remove the bottom leaves of the plant. That way you create a more spatial barrier between the leaves and the soil. So now you have two separate barriers that are protecting from that soil splash up. And lastly, I will treat my plants once a week with potassium bicarbonate. I put 2 tablespoons of potassium bicarbonate per 1 gallon of water. And I always test it first and I'll spray one of my tomatoes just to make sure I have my mix correct. And I'll wait 24 hours. And then the next day I'll go and spray the entirety of those, my tomato crop. And what that does is it changes the pH on the surface of the leaf. This doesn't allow those fungal spores to grow. And that's been a very highly effective strategy. Make sure you're doing all of your proper pruning so it promotes good, healthy airflow, which allows your plant to dry. Make sure that you're watering your soil and not your plants. Again, trying to keep that foliage of the tomato really dry is really going to set you ahead of staying ahead of the fungus. You will never get rid of the fungus completely, but you'll slow it down drastically so it won't impact your tomato harvest yield.
There you go. I hope that was helpful. And now let's go.
You know, another thing you can do with the tomatoes too is, you know, if you have the room to rotate, don't grow the tomatoes in the same spot each
Great
year.
Point.
And when Joshua talked about airflow, I mean, that's the thing I have found is I get more tomatoes by planting fewer plants.
You really need
a minimum of 3 or 4 feet between each plant for them to kind of be able to mature and be productive without and minimize fungal issues.
Okay, well, let's hope that those tomato plants have better days ahead. We'll go back to the phones now. We have Melanie on the line. Hi, Melanie. What's your question or comment? Do we have Melanie? All right.
I have a maple tree
there you go. Okay.
In my backyard that is shedding leaves in August. And it's been doing that for the last 2 years. And I was wondering if you have a reason that it might be doing that. I have other maple trees in my yard, but they are not shedding their leaves.
So just one particular tree, Melanie?
Yes.
Okay, we'll hang up and see if the guys can help us out here. Thanks so much for the call, Melanie. We appreciate it. So it sounds like another tree issue in our area. Melanie wants to know about this one maple tree that she has, despite having others that are doing well. And what's going on with this one, do you think? It's shedding its leaves in August again.
Well, so again, go ahead, Peter.
Well, no, I was just going to, basically say the same thing. It's in our area of expertise, but you know, sometimes that can be a result of drought and excessive heat, you know, during midsummer. So that could be a possibility. But then again, I would definitely have her contact an arborist or OSU Extension at the number I gave before to kind of get more specific information on that. Because it can be sort of a nonspecific indicator. It could be a result of a couple different things. So you really want to, you know, talk to somebody who's an expert in the field.
Okay, Melanie, so contact the OSU Extension Office, and the number we gave out earlier is 513-946-8989, and good luck with that. Sad to hear about your tree situation. So we're going to continue the gardening show. We've got a bunch of callers ready to tell us what their issues are, what their successes have been. We've got a bunch of emails to get through. You are listening to our monthly gardening show right here on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, and we continue now with the gardening show We're joined today by Turner Community Garden Program Director Peter Huttinger. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
And we have Water Fields Director of Greenhouse Operations and Adjunct Faculty Member at the University of Cincinnati, Joshua Jones. Hello, Joshua.
Hello.
All right, so we've got some comments, some emails, some phone calls to get through, and just a little bit of time, only a quarter of an hour left in our program, so we're going to have to start the lightning round early, which means make your advice and perspective as succinct as we can so we can try to help as many of our dedicated listeners as possible on this monthly show. We'll go back to the phone lines now with Derek. Hi, Derek. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, I was wondering, next year will be, I guess, the 17th year last time that the cicadas came out, and I was wondering, is there anything I need to do now to help prevent any damage next year when they come out?
All right, Derek, we'll hang up and turn over to the guys on this one. I think this is exactly what we need to be talking about, another crisis in our area. The locusts, the cicadas, rather, are coming back. Joshua, is this a blowtorch situation?
Only if you want it to be. I don't think it's necessary. I know it's been quite a while. I think I was a senior in high school when they last came out. I don't remember a ton of damage that they did to crops as far as your garden goes. I think there might be some implications to ornamental plants such as trees and shrubs. But they're coming out in such huge numbers. If there's anything that you are, you know, really hold dear to your heart, I would try to protect it with some sort of barrier. But that would be the only thing that I would imagine that are going to stop those guys. And they sell, you know, floating row cover and different types of meshes that can keep them off of your plants. But I think they just come out in such numbers that would be the only way to kind of deter them.
Okay, well, we should probably plan to do a nice show on cicadas as we prepare for their arrival next year. I can't believe it's been 17 years already. Okay, let's...
Well, another thing, too, about cicadas, sure. too, is that they really don't... I mean, it's, you know, for mature trees and healthy trees, they don't really do much damage. It's almost, in a way, nature's way of doing some tip pruning. So it's nothing to panic about. The one thing what does happen, though, is it really bumps up... the population of moles and different things like that, because there's a number of animals that want to eat, you know, the grubs as they're coming up, or the and so, you know, you will see some increased critter activity and maybe some extra burrowing around plants. So you want to kind of keep an eye out for that.
Okay, let's go now to the phones. We've got Amy. Hi, Amy. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I do all of my vegetable gardening in containers because I don't have much of a yard. And I've had a lot of problems over the last couple of years with my cucumber plants dying quite early, turning brown and dying. I'm wondering if there's something I can do to prepare the soil now that might make it better for next year.
Okay, great question, Amy. We appreciate it. And we'll hang up and let the guys take a chance on that one. Okay, so she's growing in containers, but the cucumbers are struggling. Any ideas, Peter?
Cucumbers generally will at some point get powdery mildew or some different fungal diseases. So one thing that she can do is not use the same soil, because if this the fungal issue is soil-borne, which it generally is, by taking that, emptying the pot, and you can either clean it with a 10% bleach solution and rinse it really well, or just leave it in direct sunlight for a couple of days. That'll usually kill anything inside the pot, then start over with new soil. And then also, you do want to use some sort of, I mean, I assume if you're growing in pots, most people are using fertilizers. I would recommend using an organic fertilizer. Another thing, too, is that if you can kind of trellis it, so you, again, it's getting more air and sunlight, and then to monitor the soil moisture level. And what you want to do is you don't want to let it completely dry out, but you don't want to have it in a situation where it's sitting in wet soil or the soil is staying wet for a long period of time. So it's important to put some gravel in the bottom and maybe have it sitting in a tray. And then if you're doing water, and after you'll get some rain on it, you can't control that. But if you are watering, like Joshua mentioned earlier with the tomatoes, if you water the soil as opposed to trying to keep the leaves as dry as possible, that should prolong the life of the plant.
Okay, and joining us now on the phone is John Butcher. He's an arborist with Madison Tree Care and Landscaping, and I think he is doing us a solid by calling in about the maple tree situation. So we heard a caller, I believe that was Melanie, who called and said that she's got some maple trees. One of them is losing its leaves early. And we also had some questions about the arbor vitae, and that was browning, one from the top, another one from the bottom. John, can you help us out with these two issues?
Yeah, Michael, thanks for having me on. I can absolutely say that there are a lot of maples that are losing their leaves early this summer, and it's very close to what's happening with the vegetables, and that we're having a lot of fungal problems due to the environment. I think with the maples, it's not like you're going to change the soil, but unless it's happening year after year, I don't really think it's something that we're going to want to treat for. We want to look for that to be a consistent problem, and if it does become a consistent problem, there are some systemic fungicides we can apply to slow that down and help control that a little bit. And on the arborvitae,
Thank you for the pronunciation.
tomato, no pun intended. But a lot of those are getting bagworms, which are the little, a lot of people think the fuzzy web things in the trees are bagworms, but these are actually little bitty pine cone ornament looking things that are small worms going in and out of the bags and feeding off of the tree, which are causing a lot of those to go brown, and they can be the top, the bottom, the side, wherever. A lot of times it is the top. On the sides, I'm not quite as convinced that that's a bagworm problem, but the ones where they're describing the top browning out, I would insist that they look for those small little brown ornaments that are wiggling around a little bit, and you can cut those off with a pair of hand snips. Now is probably the best way to control them.
John Butcher, an arborist with Madison Tree Care and Landscaping. Really appreciate you calling in and helping us out with those questions. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Michael.
All right, we'll talk again soon, I hope. That was John Butcher. Okay, guys, we've got about 6 minutes. I want to run through some of these emails and get to the last of the phone calls. So I'll need you to do your best 6 or 7 word answers here as we try to get through this pile of work ahead of us. So we've got a message from Michael who says, I had plenty of cucumbers and zucchinis. Something killed my yellow squash plant vines and can't figure out what happened. Any suspicions, Joshua?
Squash vine borer. Peter was describing it earlier. If it looked like it wasn't getting water, it just kind of wilted away. That's most likely the case, or a fungal issue.
All right. Good luck with that, Michael. Tommy wants to know, what are the easiest flowers to grow in the flower border to add color from late July through September? Peter, can you help us with that?
Well, I think zinnias and cosmos are sort of good go-tos for that.
Zinnias and cosmos, Tommy. Thank you for the email. We really appreciate it. We got a message from Brad who says, a friend in Dent got 1.5 inches of rain in the last 24 hours. In Wyoming, the soils are like concrete. So he is just telling us to teach kids to read the signs of plant stress due to water shortage, like wilted leaves, curled leaves, leaf drop, scorching where the leaf edges and whole leaves become non-functional, and new leaves emerging smaller than normal. And he says, by actively helping grow shade over pavement now, future dry drought spells will be less damaging. That's just a little bit of advice from our listener, Brad, in Wyoming. Brad, thank you so much for that. We appreciate it. Terry writes to say, it seems there are a lot of trees with bagworms this year. I have 2 bags on our trees in the back, pretty high up, so we cannot cut them. Should we make an effort to try to remove them, or will they be okay? Well, Terry, I think we just heard John from Madison Tree Care saying that he didn't suspect that the bagworms were problems with those other 2 issues, but it seems that since we don't have John on the line right now, we might be able to forward your message to him and see if he'd be willing to help, Terry. We got a message from David who says, I have collards planted in my garden. The plants seem healthy, except the leaves are being eaten by an insect. I'm trying not to use insecticide. What can I do to rid the insect from my garden? Joshua, can we help David?
My guess is it's probably the harlequin beetle, which is a small orange and black beetle that is out in force right now, and its favorite food is collards. The best way to get rid of them is hand pick them off and cover them up with a row cover. There are a lot of pesticides that do not work for those, unfortunately. So covering them with a barrier such as light row cover is the best way to go.
There you go, David. Happy picking out there with those little insects.
They don't bite.
They don't?
They don't bite. All You're right. good.
Well, then that's safe. We got a message from Joe who says, my lawn is grass, weeds, and bare spots. Please recommend non-chemical weed killers. And when should I aerate, overseed, and fertilize? Peter, can you help?
I think the, you know, the answer to aerate and overseeding it would be in the now, or maybe more in September and October in the fall when it's cooling down. You know, another thing you can do is in these bare spots is some people with when they add to their grass seed the fescue mix, they like 10-20% of winter rye, and what winter rye is an annual crop. And but it'll germinate down to like 34 degrees, so it'll grow during the winter and kind of protect and stabilize the bare spot soil until the later in the spring when the other seeds will germinate and hold it in place. And then when you mow the winter rye a couple times, it just dies back.
All right, let's get a quick phone call from Leonard. He's been waiting a long time. Hi, Leonard. Thanks for your patience. What's your question or comment?
Yes. Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a terraced area in the front of my home, probably 20 feet by 80 feet wide, where the previous owner put rose bushes there and boxwoods and a lot of ornamental rocks down there. I would like to turn this into a butterfly garden, and I have no idea where to start. Weeds grow real well, though. It gets full sun. And I just don't know where to start.
Okay, well, let me just place you on hold for a moment and see if our gentleman can help you with that. So Leonard, Joshua, wants to start a butterfly garden. He says he's got a rocky area with that had rose bushes. He wants to turn that into a butterfly garden. It gets a lot of sunlight. Is this something that can happen?
Yes, for sure. I know milkweed is a great annual, and they have perennial versions of it as well. Sometimes it acts as a self-seeding annual, so it'll come back year after year. Crepe myrtle is one that does really well here that the butterflies absolutely love. Echinacea is another great one. All of these are great in full sun. They're drought tolerant. They do really well in kind of not optimal areas. So he described kind of a rocky situation. So that I would, those are just a few. But yes, there are plenty of plants that do great in those types of environments and that the butterflies love. So do a little bit of research. You're looking for drought-tolerant, full-sun species. But the milkweed, the crepe myrtle, I know zinnias were mentioned earlier. That's an annual, but it's a great one as well.
Okay. So
and also, the Cincinnati Zoo has a pollinator garden program. So if they go onto the zoo's website, they have a lot of online resources for this. And I think it's fantastic that he's doing that. It's really important.
There you go, Leonard. I hope that was helpful for you, and it's always worthwhile to visit the zoo, so there's a good reason for you. Thanks so much for your call.
Alrighty, thank you.
All right, that was Leonard. Okay, we got a message directed at Peter and Josh. It's from Eric. He says, I've been trying to grow squash in my vegetable garden for 3 years. Every year I plant a couple dozen seeds of delicate butternut zucchini and summer squash. Every year they sprout and send out a few vines. Some of the vines produce a multitude of flowers, but I never get a single squash. And guys, he put the sad face crying emoji on this, so this is a very serious request from Eric. He says, I water them fairly often during the driest months, but I might miss a week or two when I'm away on vacation. What am I doing wrong? Joshua, can you help Eric?
Well, get a soil test. That's going to help you decide. You could have a low phosphorus, which is part of the reproductive needs for all of our plants. So if you're low on phosphorus, you might not be producing need for reproduction to happen, which is what we need for fruit to happen. Definitely need to call your neighbor and ask them to water during vacation. Just a couple of, especially a couple of weeks, is a long time for one of those plants to go through. They get really stressed out and they'll produce flowers to try to, you know, get their genetics out in the world, but they won't necessarily reproduce. Those are the two major things that I would really check for.
Okay, cool. Great. Thanks so much for that advice for that listener. We also got a message from Nancy who says, I would like to plant Lily of the Valley in my yard. When I checked, best time to plant, I also learned Lily of the Valley are poisonous. We just adopted a dog. Have you heard of domestic animals being poisoned by these plants? Peter, is that something you've ever heard of?
No, but I mean, there's a number of plants that are poisonous. So if you have young children or you're concerned about a pet eating it, I mean, I would just not plant it. But I mean, I haven't heard anything specific. I mean, animals are pretty smart about it. They kind of know instinctually what to eat and not to eat. I just think it's best not to take the risk.
And
yeah, it's all parts of that plant are poisonous. I would certainly stay away from it if they have both animals or children.
And with just about 30 seconds to spare, we will get through all of the questions if we get through this one. John writes us and says, I have a half-acre organic garden. I'm always troubled by crop rotation because it seems that one crop may often fall into two families. Could you provide a resource to help simplify and clarify what plants should precede and follow one another? Peter, can you help with that?
Well, there's a book called The Market Gardener by Jean-Paul Fortier. And I think that's a really good go-to reference. The other thing that the Turner Farm Community Gardens, every Saturday at the Price Hill Community Garden, we do work and learn sessions. And you can kind of come and see and discuss with the garden manager, Tom, exactly what he's doing for rotation. So you can contact Tom at tom@turnerfarm.org and come by on a Saturday, and we have decent training very specifically on that.
Always fun to visit Turner Farm, and there's a good reason to do it. And from Turner Farm, the Community Garden Program Director there, Peter Huttinger, has been with us, and also Joshua Jones, the Waterfields Director of Greenhouse Operations and adjunct faculty member at the University of Cincinnati. Guys, this was great. Thanks so much for the time you gave us today. We'll do it again next month.
Okay,
thanks so
thank
much
you.
For having
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our program are online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.